The market's orders.
The House Committee on Education will come back to order. And just again, I know that the House Committee is scheduled to meet from 1 to 3, and many of you have 3 o'clock committees, so we will gavel this committee out in time for you to meet your commitments to your next committee.
And I would like to open the Senate Education and General Government Committee. Welcome, everyone. And I would like to open a public hearing and an informational hearing on year-round education, and a public hearing on our two bills there, for Senate Bill 483 and 484. And I want to thank the House members for joining us today and for all of you participating in this. Before we start, I do want to make a brief comment. First of all, to say that I am not delusional about the realities that are facing us here when it comes to funding education, but I'm also not willing to give up my spirit of optimism about what happens to schools in this state once we get through this patch of weeds. I've been on looking at year-round education for the better part of a decade, and I've gone to the conferences and read some of the academic articles, and I will tell you that there's no rigorous scientific conclusions about the benefits of year-round education, but there is research, I think, that verifies what we would all seem to find intuitive, that when students spend more time in school, they learn more. And when you eliminate the summertime regression, it has a stunning effect on recall, continuity, and comprehension. The legislation that we have in front of us is really nothing more than a template than on a bill that I do hope we can pass this session that at least begins allowing school districts to lay down some sort of framework where they can do this through pilot projects or foundation money or grants or something like that. So I will need your help on getting something like that. I hope you can keep an open mind, kind of suspend reality for an hour or so here. No one in the legislature can ever be criticized for being thoughtful about education. So thank you for joining me in that spirit, and let's get started. I'd like our Senate Administrator to briefly summarize the bills we have here.
Dana Richardson, I'm the administrator for the Senate Education General Government Committee. Senate Bill 43 requires school districts to offer supplemental summer funding to provide the instruction at no charge or for reduced charge. It allows districts to accept contributions for the purpose of offering supplemental summer instruction and declares an emergency when take effect July 1st, 2009. It is the same as Senate Bill 484, but for the relating to clause.
Okay, let's start with John Topagna and Linda Samick. We'll be joined together in a panel.
Thank you both for joining us here today.
Give us your presentation. Start off with your names.
All right. I'm John Topagna. I'm a managing director with Echo Northwest, a Portland-based economic consulting firm. A little intimidating to come up and do a presentation and have the chair summarize it so succinctly before you start. But you hit most of the high points, and it's clear that you've studied this issue. Echo Northwest has been providing research in the education area to the Chalkboard Project, Board of Business Council, and others for the last 5 or 6 years. About a year ago, we produced a little research brief on extended learning time that I think has been distributed, and this is just a handful of the highlights. The point that's probably well known among most here, particularly the educators here, the United States in general, relative to a lot of our emerging competitors, international competitors nationally, generally has a shorter school year. U.S. average is about 180 days. I didn't want to pick on Portland Public Schools, but I happen to have a data point for them, so I put them up there. That's pretty typical for the rest of Oregon school districts as well. So even within a country where schools convene on a shorter schedule than is typical, Oregon is atypical in that respect as well. When you think about extended learning time, it can take several different forms, and those have different cost considerations and impacts, and also potentially different academic gain impacts as well. You can lengthen the school day, you can add days to the school year, you can target extra time to specific groups, after school or summer programs, and you can partner with community organizations to offer out of school and academic enrichment programs. And as you think about that, all those different options, all of them have different potential academic gain potential and different costs as well. And so those are things that you always have to balance. Some school districts have experimented with altering traditional school calendars with or without extra time to reduce summer learning losses. As the chair summarized in the beginning, there is a growing and increasingly well-understood literature about the summer learning loss among particularly economically disadvantaged students who don't have sort of the enrichment opportunities that middle and higher income students might have with their families over the course of the summer. And consequently, sort of a growing consensus among academics that might be at the heart of the achievement gap. In fact, some of the work that we've recently done for the Chalkboard project that's going to be released more broadly next week, we took a look at achievement for African American and white students in Multnomah County in individual schools, and we found it was generally the case that within the school year and within an individual school, children tended to learn at the same pace. So within a school, black children and white children within a school, they may have a gap as they start, but they are learning. Their learning gains are comparable within a school. So consequently, what academics are finding is that while it may be, you may be have learning gains during the year in the school, you're getting those setbacks during the summer and times when kids aren't in school. Who benefits from extra learning time? I'm just summarizing the point I just made. Disadvantaged students have more to gain from extended learning time than others because of some of the enrichment activities that higher income families might provide to their children. Extended learning time appears to be more effective in primary and secondary grades than for middle school. Although, again, I think I would emphasize Senator Hass's point at the outset here. This is not an area that has sort of finished all of its answers and research at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bruce.
Yeah. Do you have any intuitive thought as to why at this point, or are we just too on the front end that the middle school doesn't perform?
No, I don't. I don't have an answer for that one. And I would just say that what I'm reporting here are basic trends in the research that I don't think folks have fully sorted out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow up on the same question. Have similar studies been done in other countries to see if there is that disparity in their age groups?
I am not familiar with that literature.
I could address that a little bit. Other countries don't have the same middle school configuration that we have here. In most other countries, that's a sorting time, and so they're testing students and diverting them to career tracks or college tracks or other areas, and so their students have significant incentives that ours don't have, shall we say. And my background is as a middle school teacher. And just my take on this is that's a time in life when early adolescents are working on social development more so than academic development. And so this finding does not surprise me one bit.
That was my thought. But
I knew he'd get to it.
The last point on this chart is simply that as you think about these programs, you also have to think outside of the academic benefits. There are non-academic benefits, potential crime reduction, other kinds of issues that where there are potential benefits from extending the learning day. From cost considerations, it wouldn't be an Echo Northwest presentation without some discussion of dollars and cents. The cost of adding school time is proportionately lower than the cost of existing time. That makes sense. So some estimates suggest that a 10% increase in school time would increase costs by about 6 to 7%. Massachusetts 2020 plan, which I think, given the sense of the flavor of what Senator Hess introduced his comments on, is a type of pilot program that this group might want to pay close attention to, where they have 10 schools initially in Massachusetts that are attempting to expand the school learning time by 30%, and they have a variety of different grants to put that in place in those 10 schools, and then they're evaluating it rigorously. Their estimate is a 30% increase costs about 20%, or about $1,300 per student.
John, I think that's an important factor, you know, especially where all, you know, good times and bad times are trying to be more efficient, but the buildings are there,
right,
the administrative staff is there.
Yeah, and you know, another little nuance here is that adding time to a school day is less expensive than adding a whole day, because you do have the transportation costs and sort of the added food costs and things of that nature if you're adding an entire day, whereas you don't have that if you're simply adding hours to the day. This little bullseye is simply sort of reinforcing a point that there's a lot that goes on in a school in school time, and that you want it to be as focused as possible on academic learning. This isn't sort of any academically rigorous construct of proportionate of proportions are just made up, but you have school time, you have instructional time, you have time when the teachers are actually engaged with the students, and then you have the sweet spot when the message is getting across and the child is learning. And it is the closer you get to that center in terms of focused instructional time, where children are absorbing the lessons and you're making the connection, and it's not disruptive and it's not taking roll and it's not lining up to go out to recess, the more of that you can get in the middle of this, the more valuable that additional time is going to be. Policy considerations as you think about this going forward. Time is one of many valuable resources that must be allocated to achieve learning outcomes. There's, I think really you have to think and weigh this particular policy alternative side by side to a host of others that Chalkboard and others have brought forward before you. Reduced class sizes, tutors, increasing teacher quality through professional development and those types of things. Each of those has its own sort of production function cost and expected outcome or aspired to outcome, and all of those need to be weighed carefully. Certainly before you proceed in adding time, you need to make sure that the existing time that you have now is as effectively used as possible, and there's a lot of strategic thinking that can be done about passing time and working with teachers' schedules to make sure that the existing time that you have scheduled is used as effectively as possible. And I know school districts across the state are increasingly working in that area and have been for some time. And then simply reminding you that adding school time that does not result in more academic learning, this will probably not yield more academic achievement. So making sure, and this is one spot in the literature that you see, is that if you are adding time, you need to be filling that time with rigor or something approaching rigor. So same point here, increasing academic achievement must be compared to alternative uses of the same resources. Certainly programs that maximize the effectiveness of existing school time are sort of the very best first investment that you'd want to move on before you consider expanding time. I think going back to Massachusetts 2020 and those pilot programs, each of them was given a pilot budget. They were told within a budget you have to increase instructional time by 30%. So it was a blend. I mean, there's a net increase in the budget, but it wasn't a 30% increase in the budget. So there was scheduling changes in addition to sort of net time added to those schedules. So it's a blend of those two. Other interventions, such as early childhood education, may potentially have stronger effects on academic achievement. So those, again, those investments need to be weighed side by side with these investments. Programs targeted to specific populations may be a more effective use of scarce resources, particularly in these kind of fiscal times, than programs that expand learning time for all students. I think given the fiscal reality that the state is in for this biennium and probably for the next couple, pilot programs that are focused for students, particularly economically disadvantaged students, would be a place to start if you had an opportunity.
Mr. Chair.
May I start, sir?
Bullet number two, you say may have stronger effect. Bullet number three, say may be more effective. Are you suggesting that the jury is still out on early childhood education?
No, I would say that the jury is not out on three or four well-understood and well-studied Perry High Scope and the Carolina Citadarian programs that have gone through randomized controlled experiments and been followed at great length. I guess the only hedging that I have there in the word may is you have to make sure that when you're implementing those programs, you're implementing them here in this state with the fidelity and as closely as replicating what was studied in those programs in other places. But if you're looking for evidence-based policy in education, the list is short and early childhood programs are on them. So recommendations then, as you think about this going forward, choose a portfolio of cost-effective interventions based on specific outcomes. Start small, implement pilot programs for carefully selected sites and groups. I think it's really important to think about trying a variety of different interventions here. This is a very important one, but frankly, the story on what works in education hasn't been completely written. In fact, you're probably at the beginning of that book, not anywhere toward the middle or the end of it. And as important as it is to get these pilots going, it is just as important to evaluate them rigorously and understand if they are getting you where you need to be. There's far too little evaluation, rigorous evaluation in education. I would say that if you are fortunate enough to find any resources to go forward in this area, that you should look for federal resources to fund evaluations. I know the Institute for Educational Sciences, Department of Education at the federal level, for a number of years has been very interested in trying to find state partners to partner with for rigorous evaluations of interventions they're interested in learning about. And I think there would be some opportunities there if the state focused on that. Finally, utilize evidence-based practices. As you expand time, you can fill that time with things like one-on-one tutoring, which is a practice, a practice that has been studied rigorously. So focusing on what it is you're doing in that time and making sure that you're using all the evidence available to you. And then finally, the last point again, just learning from the experience. So with that, any questions where I can turn it over to Linda?
Why don't we go to the dean here after she's done? We'll take some questions.
Okay.
Dean Samick, if you could give your name, perhaps some background. And
certainly. Okay. Thank you, Senator Haas and Representative Gelser and committee members. I'm Linda Samick. I'm the dean of the School of Education at George Fox University. But today I'm here representing Chalkboard as part of the Citizen Core and an advisory panel. And I just wanted to give a little bit of background of my work with Chalkboard. I was part of the original Educator Administrator Quality Work Group and had the opportunity to co-author the final report from that group. We started our work in 2005 and spent a lot of time talking about the importance of quality preparation, licensure, induction, mentoring, and other sorts of things for educators, teachers, and administrators in particular. But along the way, as we were talking about the importance of quality preparation and professional development for those folks, we also talked about the quality of the experience that pre-kindergarten through 12th grade students have in our public schools in the state of Oregon. And those are obviously very, very closely, tightly tied together. As I was looking at back through the research and resources on work around extended school year, you'll note that in the piece that I've provided for you, there's a quote from Karen Holly Miles. She's the Executive Director of Education Resource Strategies. She, in a session recently, noted that Oregon has one of the shortest school years of any state in the nation and one of the shortest school days in the nation. And John referenced that a little bit earlier in his presentation. Also, this last weekend, I was in Chicago for the annual meeting of the American Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. One of our keynote speakers was Linda Darling Hammond. She's been policy advisor for President Obama in the education arena and was one of the shortlist names for a Secretary of Education. One of the things that she reminded our group is that there are five states in the nation that currently spend more money on incarceration than education. I always cringe a bit when I hear that statement because I know that Oregon is one of those states. So with those things in mind and thinking about how we serve our children in the state of Oregon and thinking about an extended school year and what it could provide for our students, I listed a couple of things that I think are critical. It would give additional time for young children to build skills and understandings that are important foundations for later learning. It would also provide additional time for struggling learners for a variety of reasons to work on the holes that they have in their knowledge and skills. It also provides additional time for advanced students and others to dig deeper into the content. It was really interesting to me, John's comment in their work about extended school years seem to have more impact on elementary students and high school students than on middle school students. My background, I was a math and science teacher both in middle school and high school. I've also taught in community college and in both public and private four-year institutions. And having two boys who are now young adults and working with them through the middle school years, I think that there are probably a lot of fairly obvious reasons for that. But extended time also gives you an opportunity to build relationships with students that can keep kids in school who might otherwise leave. And we know that a big leaving time is between 8th and 9th grade and early on in 9th grade. So that would certainly help there. An additional piece that I think is important, I work with a small research group from five institutions across the state. For the last 8 years, we've been following the impact of No Child Left Behind and state accountability on middle school teachers and students. And it's been interesting to hear the teachers talk about there have been some very important things that have happened as a result of No Child Left Behind. But one of the not very positive things is that a large portion of our instructional time is now taken up with assessment from outside the school setting. They're not asking anybody to take that away because that's important, but it would be nice if we could replace some of the time that has been removed from instructional time and designated for external assessment. So an extended school year would certainly help with that. As John mentioned too, you know, we're realists. We're not too optimistic at the moment about the economic climate we're in. And I'm hearing school districts talk about closing on May 1st or May 15th or 5 days early or whatever. And so talking about extending a school year when districts are talking about shortening the school year can be a rather difficult thing. But I think instead what you folks might want to do is take this as an opportunity to rethink the schooling system in the state of Oregon and think about how you could design a truly effective system that serves all children well. And I think that this might be a wonderful time to do some of that planning, and I think that's what Senator Haas might be suggesting. My personal favorite quote from the study that John is sharing with you here says that educators and policymakers, so me the educator, you folks the policymakers, interested in proceeding should carefully target those students who stand to gain the most from extended learning time and offer them the highest quality, most appropriate programming available. So it seems to me that a few well-designed pilot projects in the state might be a good place to begin. I'm happy to answer questions as well and offer additional information that might be helpful to you as you go about your work.
Thank you, Dean. We will take some questions. John, if you wouldn't mind putting up that slide that showed the numbers of days as kind of a backdrop as we ask you questions here. I think that pretty much speaks to this issue. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and also Co-Chair Gelser. Thank you so much for this presentation. I don't think there's any doubt that we need to lengthen the school year. From looking at this and from everything that I've seen, both in terms of numbers of hours per day and numbers of days in the school year. That reality is, as we all recognize, that's probably not going to happen now. But if we could make the change to keep the same number of school days, and looking through the papers, it looks like Salem Kaiser is doing this. What if we shortened that break over the summer by just spreading the days out over the year? Is it worth it to do that? I know that comes with costs, including air conditioning in some of the schools. But is it worth it to do that, to make that step, even if we can't add additional days or additional hours, if we just spread it out differently?
Go ahead and answer this one. We do have experts coming up on that topic right after them.
Okay. Thank you.
I would just mention that one of the places I've worked is in the Woodburn School District, and some of you might know that a number of years ago they were doing a year-round school system that had more to do with lack of space for their students in their school buildings, but I think it was pretty successful for the kids. They had an opportunity to be in school not more days, but in a different time configuration. And the research does tell us that kids from low socioeconomic backgrounds, English language learners, and some others do benefit from having shorter gaps in the time that they leave school and return to school. The folks that suffered the most under that system, I think, were principals and the teachers who taught not only in their year-round track, but also worked in other tracks during their time that they were supposed to have off. Interesting.
I would just encourage the use of a variety of approaches and then test them all rigorously. I mean, this is a time where, again, the book on what works in education is a pretty short one because there hasn't been an evaluation focus. And if you ever end up with an opportunity to invest in something like this, you should try a variety of approaches, follow them very closely, and see which one ends up driving academics at the least cost.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been racking my brain in this economic situation we find ourselves in about how to not cut into the education that we're going to provide kids in this biennium. I've been trying to figure out a way to keep schools open the number of days that they are scheduled to be open. I'm being told that's impossible or darn close. Something you said jumped out at me, which is that you can lengthen days for less money than you can add days. I'm wondering if we might have an experiment here forced upon us where we could lengthen the days remaining in this school year in an attempt to deliver the same amount of instruction
hours.
Any thoughts on that?
I haven't done the budget numbers. I see Representative Kopp may have an answer, but I think what you're referring to is the possibility of four-day school weeks with lengthened days. I know that, for state government, the state of Washington implemented that at the end of the last fiscal year. So there is something there. I haven't run a specific analysis on that, but that should save some resources, albeit at the expense of some disruption to parents' schedules.
We do have districts in Oregon currently operating with four-day school weeks, but I don't know that we've looked at the data to see what student achievement looks like, particularly in those configurations.
Follow up? Yeah. I wasn't even necessarily thinking of 4 days. I was thinking, you know, still stick with the 5 days, but if it's going to end X days earlier in the school year, we could just extend them out and get the same amount. Quixotic, perhaps.
Thank you, Senator Haas. My comment, and Linda, you're so right. I was really fortunate to be in Woodburn as a teacher when we did the research on year-round education, and we did extensive research for months because we were at a crisis with our facilities, and we were looking at better ways to use our facilities. And the student achievement data, I don't know, followed us as well as the And I'll put in a plug here for potential, when people say you can't have all-day kinder, you can have all-day kinder if you look at the options in your calendar. And because it's not a facilities issue, it's an education issue. But then I became administrator the year we implemented the year-round schedule, and overwhelmingly very successful. Very, very successful, and it was a political decision to end that, not a policy decision.
Thank you. Rick Denmar, and then we'll bring up the next panel.
Thank you. Looking at your chart, do you have numbers, if you could, you know, weight salaries for teachers, dollars per pupil? I mean, you know, if you had a, I hazard to say this, but if teachers work for free, you know, we could extend it 365 and look really good. But so the point is, I mean, it's a resource, it's a GDP issue, the success of the country, the culture of the country. South Korea is a lot different. You know, and it's 225. You know, is that every student? Are those the only students that actually make it to high school? And I'm wondering if, because that can be a little bit misleading.
Well, there's a lot of variables going on here. There are teacher salaries, there are class sizes, which impact how many teachers you have to hire, and many of the Asian countries in particular have much larger class sizes than the United States does. This chart is put up simply as a comparison on this particular metric to show that we are out of line, since this is the topic that we're talking about today. I think, again, to bring us back, you have to think about the United States expanding at the margin and saying, at the margin, what does it cost you? Do you have evidence that you could drive academic achievement gains? I would say at best right now that is mixed. This is a research and development exercise, not an evidence-based strategy at this point, and that's why you would want to start small, try a variety of different models at once and test them rigorously, and try them with kids who are on the wrong side of the achievement gap.
Thank you both. Excellent testimony. Michael Rutz and Mike Bednarik, committees. That there are two different kinds of year-round education. There's the kind I think I'm focusing on, where you add 30, 40 days in summer school. And there's the kind I think a Representative Kopp has experienced where you stagger out the same number of days at a means of eliminating the summertime regression. I think these two gentlemen have experience. They've lived it here in Oregon. And take it away, guys.
Representative Gelser, you know, my name is Mike Loretz. I'm currently the Director of School Improvement and Federal Programs in the McMinnville School District. I've been an advocate for time reform my whole career. I've been an administrator in rural, suburban, and urban districts. I've principaled for about 20 years at the middle and elementary level. My last principalship was at the Modified Calendar Pilot School in Salem Kaiser. Where we ran a single-track modified calendar, which is not a multi-track, which is what you experienced in Woodburn, where we did what Senator mentioned about just taking the current number of days and spreading them out. to reduce the summer learning loss and creating some opportunity for intersession programs, another term, which is kind of a summer school stuck in the school year during those blocks of time which we have off.
So you were principal at the what school?
It was Four Corners Elementary School, which was one of the pilot schools for the modified calendar in Salem-Keizer. I left there, worked with Oregon Department of Education as a distinguished educator for 5 years, working with schools across the state of Oregon on school improvement efforts, worked with a lot of districts, a lot of schools, and now I'm in the McMinnville School District where we are not inventing our calendars or reinventing our calendars, but I am proud to say that we have many extended learning opportunities for students. We have a K-plus program, which is an extended day, full-day kindergarten for those students that need it. We serve about a third to a half of our students in that program. We have an after-school program throughout our system at all levels, award-winning one at the elementary school that was recognized by the governor. And we have summer school at all levels, and we have reading intervention programs and layers of support within our schools, which is the goal of a lot of the efforts that we're talking about with extended learning time. Our goal in, there was a National Commission on Time and Learning had a report called Prisoners of Time, which you might have heard about. It became a Bible for me. I completely believe in the recommendations. I've given you several handouts, which I'm not going to have you leaf through at this time, but they are from sessions that we've done in previous presentations around the state and in the country that I think highlight a few of those. I didn't also mention that, I'd like to also mention, that part of my interest in year-round education or continuous learning came when I made the move from middle school to elementary school and was stunned on how much time it takes to get a school up and running and kids into a learning environment in September. And then when we finally got them going, we would shut down the school year for 3 months and have to do that over again. I became very involved in year-round education, started attending the National Association of Year-Round Education meetings. Mike and I worked together to form the Northwest Association for Year-Round Education, of which we were both officers for 5 years. We put on conferences in the Northwest. We were a state regional affiliate of the National Association of Year-Round Education, and I was on the board of directors of the National Association for Year-Round Education for 6 years, until just recently. I think that's how you found my name. It was still on the website on the National Association. So, again, this has been great to follow the previous presenters because they covered a lot of the ground that I think we wanted to cover in terms of rationale. I can tell you that I feel like I've been spending the better part of my career sort of tilting at windmills, trying to convince the world that we needed to change. I truly believe that this is not necessarily about pie charts and bar graphs. This is what we all know in our hearts, that the longer kids are in school, the more that they learn. And the starting and stopping of education that we do in this country just doesn't make sense on a very basic level to me. A great quote from Charles Ballinger, a longtime president of the National Association of Year-Round, "No one developing a learning calendar from scratch in today's world with the goal of being the most effective in producing quality students who are competitive with other countries would design a calendar that would stop instruction for 3 continuous months. And that's essentially what our current agrarian, traditional calendar does, and that's why I've spent, like I said, the better part of my career trying to break us out of that traditional system. We did experience a pilot project. You mentioned the term pilot in looking at this. We did a pilot project in Salem-Keizer. Mike was kind of the spearhead of that project. I'll let him explain what our goals were for that program and how we went about that, but we had some funding for intercession, which would be, I would liken to what you're talking about, Senator Hass, in terms of some incentive money to provide extra programming for those additional days, because when you stretch the year out and you provide more learning during those intercession times, you are in fact extending the year, the school year, by several weeks. The funding dried up for that, and that would be my only caution about pilots, is be sure that you can
sustain,
continue or sustain what you do develop incentive for. But I think with that, I'll let Mike talk a little bit about what we did in Salem-Keizer.
Senator Hass and Co-Chair Gelser, members of the committee, I'll just be very brief with my comments because Mike covered a lot of the ground. I'll just give you the framework for our pilot project in the Salem-Keizer School District. We were very crowded in our schools in 1990 and did a feasibility study and did a number of town hall meetings with our community asking what should we do. One of three options that the community told us was pursue the concept of year-round education or year-round schools. It was the multi-track year-round approach where we were able to expand the capacity of the building, use a 12-month calendar, and run multiple tracks of kids at different times. Essentially, we could have 600 kids attend school in a school built for 450 by having them on four different tracks, and they would operate as schools within a school. That was put aside while we pursued a bond measure. The bond measure was successful, but the school board had heard enough about the educational advantages that a modified calendar or year-round schools could provide, even in a single track, or especially in a single track approach, that they asked, let's bring this back and let's try this and see for ourselves. Senator, you mentioned the lack of empirical evidence for year-round education, and we're still facing that. But just the gut sense from having done feasibility studies was that it had something to offer for kids. We started a pilot project. Mike was principal of one of our two flagship schools in 1983. We had up to eight elementary schools on a modified calendar through the 2001-2002 school year. All eight of those schools were Title I schools at our peak operation. Their average free and reduced lunch percentage was 80%, so they were high-need schools. We were meeting some needs. We were filling in some gaps where kids from those neighborhoods were educationally disadvantaged. I think because of the intercession support falling away, that left us with a calendar that was restructured but couldn't take advantage of those intercession periods to offer extended learning intervention and remedial education for kids that needed it. And so it became a restructured calendar that was actually a little bit better for teachers because they had a three-week winter break and a two- or three-week spring break, so it wasn't as much of a horse race to get from September 1st to the beginning of June and complete the school year, but it didn't bring real educational advantages to kids, and so it collapsed. It had been done as a site-based decision-making pilot project, and so in order for each of those eight schools and neighborhoods to get into the pilot project, they had to do their own extensive studies, survey staff to see if they were supportive, survey parents for levels of support, bring a proposal to the school board and have that approved. And so ultimately we had eight elementary schools on this different calendar than our traditional calendar within a 55 school and now 65 school system, operating two different systems, and so we started realizing some inefficiencies in support services for kids in things like transportation and food services, and so the decision was made after a full district study looking at the idea of a common calendar for learning. The decision was made to fold the tents on the modified calendar and get back to one calendar for the entire district.
So you were up 45 days on, 15 off.
Our model was actually about a 60-15.
60 days.
Yeah, and because we were operating within the larger school system, we wanted to start school the same day as the rest of the school system. We tried to anchor our intercessions or our vacation periods and have as many vacation periods as possible, or in common as possible, with the other schools, just so that our community and our parents had less disjoint in their own calendars. And I think at the ending calendar, we did go through about the 4th of July weekend with school. There was a question earlier about air conditioning. We actually did a temperature study, and the first 3 weeks of school in September were exactly the same temperature range as the last 3 weeks of our modified calendar, getting us through 4th of July. And if you've been in Oregon for any length of time, you know that schools doesn't start until after, or summer doesn't start until after 4th of July.
So you did this, and it sounds like it was successful, you saw it a bit, but the district decision to just go back to the more traditional system was based on what Representative Kopp called
we lost momentum.
Schedules.
We lost momentum. We really couldn't point to empirical evidence. We had anecdotal evidence that teachers liked it, parents liked it, but because we were in high-need schools, schools with as much as 50% turnover in the course of a year, it was hard to really isolate a baseline or a study group. If you're going to look at the effect of the calendar on student performance, you want to look at kids who are on that calendar for 3 to 5 years and kids from similar SES groupings who are on a traditional calendar. And we just didn't have the capacity within our system to do that rigorous study. So we stopped really having things to tout to neighboring schools as evidence that this was working.
I would tell you, we Four Corners felt very successful. And we felt like we had three distinct terms of school, three Septembers where people came back excited, refreshed for learning, three times a year when staff had a chance to rethink what they were teaching and analyze their kids. It was a very effective model for us, and we did think we got great results, but again, it was hard for us to show because we did boundary changes right in the middle of our pilot project, which is only set up for 3 years. We determined we really needed at least 5 to 7 to show the growth of a calendar change is a significant issue, but there were many other things that we do in education. That's why I think the previous presenters pointed out research and studies and definitive tests of any intervention in a people business is a pretty hard task because you're literally trying everything all the time. So to isolate it is the calendar that's making the difference was a problem for us. But we did feel it was successful. And I think for the same Representative Comp, the political reasons are if there is a big segment of your district, particularly a high school which tends to be the driver sometimes.
We won't talk about football schedule.
Making that change. Then you've got friction when you've got parents and different kids and different calendars within your own district. So pilots are a caution if there isn't at least some intent that everybody would move if the pilot is successful. Yeah. If it's sure, go ahead and do your pilot over here and have fun, but when it's all said and done, we have, you know, that's great for you, but we have no intentions of sort of coming along with that.
Right.
And that's not a criticism of Salem Kaiser. I commend them for giving us that opportunity to try that pilot. They stepped out of definitely a traditional mindset and let us do that pilot. It just became the way calendars are built in our state right now, and I think our country, you start after Labor Day, you figure out what's the minimum number of days that we have to take off so that we can get out as early as we can in June, and you just schmoosh it all together. So you start here and you end as early as you can to get out as quick as you can, and that's not with kids' best interest in mind.
And Jordan at the hip with the university calendar.
Yeah. So if you really have learning as your focus, you want kids to learn, you're going to design a calendar that's based on learning. And it's not stressing teachers out and kids out and increasing staff absenteeism and student stress. It's designing a calendar that makes sense for learning. And that's where the 45-15, the 60-20, the 60-15, the number of days on off, the balanced, continuous model of teaching and learning just makes sense. Again, if you go to a typical school in June, you will see people putting a ton of energy into covering bookshelves with paper and putting things away and stacking things up and covering stuff up because we're closing down, and then they have to undo that. We never did that. We did all of our cleaning, all of our organizing throughout the year. Safeway and Albertsons don't close down to do their cleaning. They do it all the time, and that's what we got into, and that's the way a system can run, and it really was more continuous for kids, continuous for teachers, and a better model. But the key here, and I guess we'll close with that, is that we have to come up with a way in our school system to provide more time for the kids that need it. A lot of times, the cost is going to be to extend the school year for every kid. Maybe that's not the most important as it is to extend the time for the kids that need it. That's how you close gaps. That's how with our extended kindergarten program, we don't provide it necessarily for all kids, but we do for the kids that need it, because then we can actually bring them up and close that gap. If you keep providing the same intervention for everybody, you just keep perpetuating the same issues. I will tell you that we did it at our newest school in McMinnville that has 80% students on free reduced lunch. We used Title I money to provide full-day kindergarten for everybody. So the district-funded portion, which is the K-plus program, and they used their Title I money to make sure that all students had that opportunity because of the high poverty, and they've seen huge gains from that. So I know you visited with that about a week or two ago about full-day kindergarten.
Yes, we've been visiting that one. Well, thank you both. Senator Cruz?
Yeah, and I don't know that there's an answer at this point in time, but the earlier panel talked about weighing all-year school versus early childhood education and some different rubrics in that. But some of the information I've received that basically says that the gains we have with early childhood for some of the students starts to fall off in fourth, fifth grade sort of thing. Do you think that this sort of model is going to would be something that would help us from losing those gains we're getting simply because it's a more continual instruction?
Chair Haas, Senator Cruz, I believe that the kind of students that receive Head Start and early childhood programs are often more mobile in higher poverty situations than the typical students, and I think that a more continuous, steady, year-round, balanced calendar that would give them more opportunities throughout the year would probably hold some of those early gains better than right now. They might miss a lot of school, and then they're off all summer, and that compounds things, because we can do direct correlational studies at all levels, elementary, middle, high school. You miss a certain number of days in school year, and you're not going to be successful. So we know time in school has a correlation. So if you compound that and you can't maintain that early gains, you can sort of start slipping away. And I think Senator Haas mentioned, and also the previous presenters, about summer learning loss. It's been documented. It's greater in math than in reading, and much greater in socioeconomic, lower socioeconomic than higher. So it is a real thing.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. The House side has to leave us.
So the House Committee on Education is adjourned. See you Friday.
Thank you, representatives, for your participation. And the Senate side, we will continue with this presentation. We have two bills to cover, too. Any further questions for Mike Lawrence?
Yes. It's more of a comment, but as usual, I can make it into a question if I need to, Mr. Chair. Since we're talking about time and changing time of students in schools, I wonder if you could briefly address the issue of start time. I know it's a separate issue, but since we're looking at this, why in the world do high school students who stay up late and sleep in always start first? And wouldn't that have an impact on learning?
Do you want the research-based answer or more of a trite answer to that?
Both, if you don't mind. Thank you.
Could you stop for a moment, please?
Sure.